Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 73 degrees right now. I guess the front's going to come through sometime later. I believe the chance for showers is finished. Highs of 85 today, and then looking ahead to the weekend, tomorrow's going to be nice. Highs of 85, 87 on Sunday. Warm, but dry, hopefully less humidity. And looking ahead to the next week, no chance for showers until next Saturday as it stands now. Maybe a little dip in the temperatures by next Thursday or Friday, but we'll see. We are going to be into October by then, so hopefully. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I am okay. I'm looking forward to this weekend, man. Big old game for LSU.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's, you know, this is a great rivalry between LSU and Ole Miss. 113th meeting between these two teams, and it's interesting, Tommy, that this is the first time since that legendary game in 1959 that these two teams are meeting undefeated. And I think also for both of these teams, they're really trying to figure out what they're made of. Both of them have had some nice wins, but we'll really get a better idea of who these two teams are after Saturday afternoon.
If only it would happen on Halloween weekend.
Well, maybe when the we'll find out in December what the 2026 schedule looks like, and maybe they'll put that game. I think next year Halloween falls on a Saturday, so who knows? Maybe we'll see LSU Ole Miss next Saturday,
man.
Or in 2026 on Halloween Day.
You just gave me chills thinking about that. I'm gonna tell you what. Maybe a little fog in Tiger Stadium on evening, huh? Maybe, who knows? Let's talk. What kind of season is Ole Miss having?
Well, Ole Miss started the year beating Georgia State. They crushed them. They scored 60-some points. They've actually played a couple conference games already. They've played Kentucky. They played Arkansas. Both of those schools are, you know, at the bottom. I mean, Kentucky might be the worst team in the SEC, but LSU avenged the loss to Ole Miss avenged the loss to Kentucky from a year ago. Arkansas, Talen Green is a really good quarterback for the Razorbacks, but that's kind of all they got at Arkansas as far as big-time playmakers. Talen Green had a nice game, but eventually Ole Miss figured out a way to win the game. And then they really beat up on Tulane last week. Tulane is obviously a really good football program, one of the best group of five schools out there as far as how well they are at that level, but Tulane was not ready to face one of the better teams in the Southeastern Conference, and the Rebels really embarrassed them last Saturday. So, again, kind of like LSU. You know, LSU has beaten Clemson. That was a really good win. It's still a good win regardless of what Clemson's record is. To go into Clemson in that environment and get a victory, that's a really good win for LSU. And then LSU beat up on a Florida team that's really struggling. And then, of course, LSU's played Tech and Southeastern, and that's not much of a measuring stick for LSU. That's why it really comes down to, you know, that's why this Saturday is such a game for both of these teams to really prove just how good they are.
Yeah, you got Ole Miss 13 in the country, LSU number 4, I think it is, but yet LSU is the underdog. Explain that to me.
Well, home field advantage, of course, plays a big role in this. I think probably what odds makers are looking at is just Ole Miss has looked really good on the offensive side of the football. They continue to put up big points. That's what you see out of a Lane Kiffin team. I think a lot of people were impressed with their win against Tulane. I mean, Tulane going into that game, there were some thinking it could really could really challenge Ole Miss. But what you see a lot of times in college football is, these group of five schools could look really good when they're playing up against their own competition. But you put them up against one of the better teams in a Power Four conference, they are going to struggle. And that's exactly what happened, just because Ole Miss just has way more talent than Tulane does. Ole Miss has got guys that are going to be drafted in the first three rounds of the NFL draft, and Tulane may have only like one guy that is going to be selected that high in an NFL draft. So there's a big talent gap. I think there's also questions, Tommy, about just how good this LSU offense is. Nussmeier has not looked great, even though he played very well in the Southeastern game, but he hasn't been putting up big numbers. LSU has really struggled to run the football so far this season. I think the odds makers are looking at that. I think it's just there's a lot of people want to see just how good LSU is. And I think a lot of people nationally are just looking back at that Clemson win and saying, Clemson's not that good. Mm. So LSU's not getting a lot of credit for beating the Tigers in the season opener.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. You and I talked earlier this week about rivalries and opponents and so forth. It's just odd to me that Ole Miss would play Tulane and LSU doesn't play Tulane, because that used to be a big, giant rivalry. Is there any way that comes back or not, Jeff?
We'll see, because I think LSU is still committed to playing in-state schools. Now, whether Tulane is part of that, I'm not exactly sure. I know John Summerall would really like to see that game return, but I haven't really heard much from LSU's perspective on whether they want to continue playing that or if they want to play that game again.
I know the fans would love it. I think they would. Let me open the Oconar Jeweler Talk and Text line here, 504-260-1870. No texting and driving, but yes or no, would you like to see the LSU-Tulane rivalry continued? Jeff's got an article posted at WWL.com. I'm going to quote a line from it here. Who is Trinidad Chambliss? That's a good question. We'll find out when we come back. 621 traffic now, WWL. 6:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. We're going to have the LSU game for you naturally on Saturday here on WWL. Kickoff is 2:30, I think, right, Jeff?
Yes, that's right, 2:30.
And our coverage, of course, begins with Mike Dettelier, Herb Tyler, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show at 10 a.m. That's at Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge at 11. You can come out and count down to the game at Acme, 16 surround sound TVs. I'll get it out. Then at 12:30, pregame show. Then at 2:30, kickoff, Chris Blair and Jacob Hester. And you want to turn down the sound and turn up WWL because you're going to enjoy it a lot better. So, Jeff, let's talk about this Ole Miss quarterback. Who is that guy? Chambliss.
Yeah, Trinidad Chambliss. He's been one of the big stories or surprise stories of college football so far this season. A transfer from Ferris State. And Ferris State is located in Michigan, and they're actually one of the best programs in Division II football. And they've won national championships in three of the last 4 years, and he helped lead Ferris State to a national championship a year ago. And going into the season after Jackson Dart, who's been the starting quarterback at Ole Miss, had moved on, of course, to the NFL and will be starting for the New York Giants this weekend. Austin Simmons was the guy. He had been at Ole Miss for 2 years prior to going into the season. So most people looked at him as he'll be the starting quarterback. So Ole Miss was really having a hard time trying to find a backup quarterback. And Trinidad Chambliss was getting some looks. There was certainly some interest. Temple was really committed to him. Temple really thought that he was going to be their starting quarterback for this season. But Trinidad Chambliss decided, I'd like to give it a try in the Southeastern Conference, even though he only has 1 year of eligibility left, and even though it looked like Austin Simmons would be the starter. And Simmons ended up starting the season as the starting quarterback, but he injures his ankle in the Kentucky game in week two, and Chambliss has come in, and he's looked absolutely terrific, running, throwing the football. He's been awesome against Tulane and against Arkansas. But, again, LSU's defense is a different beast. It presents a much bigger challenge for Chambliss, so it'll be interesting to see how he performs going up against what is believed to be one of the best defenses in the country.
Talk about Harold Perkins, the role he could play on Saturday, if you will.
Well, you go back to the game in 2022, I guess it would be, when LSU hosted Ole Miss, and Lane Kiffin talked about it at the end of that game, that when LSU inserted Perkins into the football game, and Perkins was just a freshman that year, he completely changed the game. 2023 was an absolute mess. Ole Miss scored 55 points, put up 706 yards of total offense. Perkins is playing out of position in the game. Perkins didn't play last year against Ole Miss. So he could have a really, really big impact in this game. Again, LSU, we talked a lot about it last year, about how LSU really struggled against dual-threat quarterbacks, quarterbacks that can run the football. This will really be the true test to see if LSU has solved those issues as far as slowing down a guy that can run the football, because Chambliss is certainly a guy that can use his legs and you know, pick up first downs that way. And this is where Harold Perkins comes into play, because he's such an athletic player, and he's a guy that can chase down quarterbacks that are running. And so we'll see how big of a game Perkins can have.
Do we see Caden Durham or not?
Well, I think we will, based on some of the reports that we're hearing, that he has been improving. But LSU also has some other guys. I think you're going to see a little bit more of Juwan Johnson after he scored a couple of touchdowns last week. Brian Kelly really believes that a guy like Caleb Jackson is starting to turn the corner. We've been waiting for that young man to finally produce on a more regular basis. So even if Caden can't go, I think LSU feels like they got some guys at the running back position that could have a good game. This is a game that LSU really should be able to break out its running game. Ole Miss has struggled this season, especially early on in the year, stopping the run. So if there's a game for LSU to get the ground game going, this would be it.
Think they win?
I think, yes, I think they will win this game. I just think they're the more talented team, Tommy, and they'll figure out a way to get a win. I think LSU offensively is better than what Ole Miss is going to put out on the field. And I think LSU's defense is that good, and they'll have a chance to make life difficult here on Chambliss.
I hope so. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time. We'll take a break. Come back right now at 6:30. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. All right, 73 degrees right now. I guess the front's going to come through sometime later. I believe the chance for showers is finished. Highs of 85 today, and then looking ahead to the weekend, tomorrow's going to be nice. Highs of 85, 87 on Sunday. Warm, but dry, hopefully less humidity. And looking ahead to the next week, no chance for showers until next Saturday as it stands now. Maybe a little dip in the temperatures by next Thursday or Friday, but we'll see. We are going to be into October by then, so hopefully. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I am okay. I'm looking forward to this weekend, man. Big old game for LSU.
Yeah, it is. It is, and it's, you know, this is a great rivalry between LSU and Ole Miss. 113th meeting between these two teams, and it's interesting, Tommy, that this is the first time since that legendary game in 1959 that these two teams are meeting undefeated. And I think also for both of these teams, they're really trying to figure out what they're made of. Both of them have had some nice wins, but we'll really get a better idea of who these two teams are after Saturday afternoon.
If only it would happen on Halloween weekend.
Well, maybe when the we'll find out in December what the 2026 schedule looks like, and maybe they'll put that game. I think next year Halloween falls on a Saturday, so who knows? Maybe we'll see LSU Ole Miss next Saturday,
man.
Or next
man.
Year, in 2026 on Halloween Day.
He just gave me chills thinking about that. I'm gonna tell you what. Maybe a little foggy fog in Tiger Stadium on evening, huh? Maybe, who knows? Let's talk. What kind of season is Ole Miss having?
Well, Ole Miss started the year beating Georgia State. They crushed them. They scored 60-some points. They've actually played a couple conference games already. They've played Kentucky. They played Arkansas. Both of those schools are, you know, at the bottom. I mean, Kentucky might be the worst team in the SEC, but LSU avenged the loss to Ole Miss avenged the loss to Kentucky from a year ago. Arkansas, Talen Green is a really good quarterback for the Razorbacks, but that's kind of all they got at Arkansas as far as big-time playmakers. Talen Green had a nice game, but eventually Ole Miss figured out a way to win the game. And then they really beat up on Tulane last week. Tulane is obviously a really good football program, one of the best group of five schools out there as far as how well they are at that level. But Tulane was not ready to face one of the better teams in the Southeastern Conference, and the Rebels really embarrassed them last Saturday. So, again, kind of like LSU. You know, LSU has beaten Clemson. That was a really good win. It's still a good win regardless of what Clemson's record is. To go into Clemson in that environment and get a victory, that's a really good win for LSU. And then LSU beat up on a Florida team that's really struggling. And then, of course, LSU's played Tech and Southeastern, and that's not much of a measuring stick for LSU. That's why it really comes down to, you know, that's why this Saturday is such a game for both of these teams to really prove just how good they are.
Yeah, you got Ole Miss 13 in the country, LSU number 4, I think it is, but yet LSU is the underdog. Explain that to me.
Well, home field advantage, of course, plays a big role in this. I think probably what odds makers are looking at is just Ole Miss has looked really good on the offensive side of the football. They continue to put up big points. That's what you see out of a Lane Kiffin team. I think a lot of people were impressed with their win against Tulane. I mean, Tulane going into that game, there were some thinking it could really challenge Ole Miss. But what you see a lot of times in college football is, these group of five schools could look really good when they're playing up against their own competition. But you put them up against one of the better teams in a Power Four conference, they are going to struggle. And that's exactly what happened, just because Ole Miss just has way more talent than Tulane does. Ole Miss has got guys that are going to be drafted in the first three rounds of the NFL draft, and Tulane may have only like one guy that is going to be selected that high in an NFL draft. So there's a big talent gap. I think there's also questions, Tommy, about just how good this LSU offense is. Nussmeier has not looked great, even though he played very well in the Southeastern game, but he hasn't been putting up big numbers. LSU has really struggled to run the football so far this season. I think the odds makers are looking at that. I think it's just there's a lot of people want to see just how good LSU is. And I think a lot of people nationally are just looking back at that Clemson win and saying, yeah, Clemson's not that good. So LSU's not getting a lot of credit for beating the Tigers in the season opener.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. You and I talked earlier this week about rivalries and opponents and so forth. It's just odd to me that Ole Miss would play Tulane and LSU doesn't play Tulane, because that used to be a big, giant rivalry. Is there any way that comes back or not, Jeff?
We'll see, because I think LSU is still committed to playing in-state schools. Now, whether Tulane is part of that, I'm not exactly sure. I know John Summerall would really like to see that game return, but I haven't really heard much from LSU's perspective on whether they want to continue playing that or if they want to play that game again.
I know the fans would love it. I think they would. Let me open the Oakland Jeweler Talk and text line here, 504-260-1870. No texting and driving, but yes or no, would you like to see the LSU-Tulane rivalry continued? Jeff's got an article posted at WWL.com. I'm going to quote a line from it here. Who is Trinidad Shambliss? That's a good question. We'll find out when we come back. 621 traffic now, WWL. 6:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. We're going to have the LSU game for you naturally on Saturday here on WWL. Kickoff is 2:30, I think, right, Jeff?
Yes, that's right, 2:30.
And our coverage, of course, begins with Mike Dettelier, Herb Tyler, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, Tiger Tailgating Show at 10 a.m. That's at Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge at 11. You can come out and count down to the game at Acme, 16 surround TVs. I'll get it out. Then at 12:30, pregame show. Then at 2:30, kickoff, Chris Blair and Jacob Hester. And you want to turn down the sound and turn up WWL because you're going to enjoy it a lot better. So, Jeff, let's talk about this Ole Miss quarterback. Who is that guy? Trinidad Shambliss.
Yeah, Trinidad Shambliss. He's been one of the big stories or surprise stories of college football so far this season. A transfer from Ferris State. And Ferris State is located in Michigan, mm-hmm. and they're actually one of the best programs in Division II football, and they've won national championships in three of the last 4 years, and he helped lead Ferris State to a national championship a year ago. And going into the season after Jackson Dart, who's been the starting quarterback at Ole Miss, had moved on, of course, to the NFL and will be starting for the New York Giants this weekend. Austin Simmons was the guy. He had been at Ole Miss for 2 years prior to going into this season. So most people looked at him as he'll be the starting quarterback. So Ole Miss was really having a hard time trying to find a backup quarterback. And Trinidad Chambliss was getting some looks. There was certainly some interest. Temple was really committed to him. Temple really thought that he was going to be their starting quarterback for this season. But Trinidad Chambliss decided, hey, I'd like to give it a try in the Southeastern Conference, even though he only has 1 year of eligibility left, and even though it looked like Austin Simmons would be the starter. And Simmons ended up starting the season as the starting quarterback, but he injures his ankle in the Kentucky game in week two, and Chambliss has come in, and he's looked absolutely terrific, running, throwing the football. He's been awesome against Tulane and against Arkansas. But, again, LSU's defense is a different beast. It presents a much bigger challenge for Chambliss. So it'll be interesting to see how he performs going up against what is believed to be one of the best defenses in the country.
Talk about Harold Perkins, the role he could play on Saturday, if you will.
Well, you go back to the game in 2022, I guess it would be, when LSU hosted Ole Miss, and Lane Kiffin talked about it at the end of that game, that when LSU inserted Perkins into the football game, and Perkins was just a freshman that year, he completely changed the game. 2023 was an absolute mess. Ole Miss scored 55 points, put up 706 yards of total offense. Perkins is playing out of position in the game. Perkins didn't play last year against Ole Miss. So he could have a really, really big impact in this game. Again, LSU, we talked a lot about it last year, about how LSU really struggled against dual-threat quarterbacks, quarterbacks that can run the football. This will really be the true test to see if LSU has solved those issues as far as slowing down a guy that can run the football, because Chambliss is certainly a guy that can use his legs and pick up first downs that way. And this is where Harold Perkins comes into play, because he's such an athletic player and he's a guy that can chase down quarterbacks that are running. And so we'll see how big of a game Perkins can have.
Do we see Caden Durham or not?
Well, I think we will, based on some of the reports that we're hearing that he has been improving. But LSU also has some other guys. I think you're going to see a little bit more of Juwan Johnson after he scored a couple of touchdowns last week. Brian Kelly really believes that a guy like Caleb Jackson is starting to turn the corner. We've been waiting for that young man to finally produce on a more regular basis. So even if Caden can't go, I think LSU feels like they got some guys at the running back position that could have a good game. This is a game that LSU really should be able to break out its running game. Ole Miss has struggled this season, especially early on in the year, stopping the run. So if there's a game for LSU to get the ground game going, this would be it.
Think they win?
I think they will win this game. I just think they're the more talented team, Tommy, and they'll figure out a way to get a win. I think LSU offensively is better than what Ole Miss is going to put out on the field, and I think LSU's defense is that good, and they'll have a chance to make life difficult here on Chambliss.
I hope so. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time. We'll take a break. Come back right now at 6:30. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. Yes, it is, and yes, we are. 7:15. Should be a little bit drier and, I don't know about cooler today, but the rain is gone, and you should notice highs in the mid-80s and lower humidity, so it should feel a little bit better. Dr. Corey Hebert joins us now, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine, to talk about the meeting of the Vaccine Advisory Committee. How are you doing, Dr. Corey? So we'll call him back. Somebody texted me. This is why I was a little bit distracted before. It says, and you got to know, yeah, I don't know what I'm looking at here. It says hub.jhu.edu from November 5th of 2019, taking Tylenol during pregnancy associated with elevated risks for autism, ADHD. A Johns Hopkins study analyzing umbilical cord samples found that newborns with the highest exposure to acetaminophen were about three times more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD or autism spectrum disorders in childhood. I don't know what I'm looking at here. I don't know if that's from Johns Hopkins or not. Somebody sent me that link and said it's a real study, not politics, and I wanted to look at that so that I could ask Dr. Hebert about it, because we always talk about going online and finding information and what's reliable and what's not. And with that, we welcome in Dr. Hebert. How you doing, Dr. Corey?
Hey, it seems like that miscommunication is all over the world right now, Doc.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So,
I'm not sure.
So somebody texted me this, and I went to it to look at it. It says hub.jhu.edu/2019/1105 acetaminophen pregnancy autism, taking Tylenol during pregnancy associated with elevated risk for autism ADHD. It quotes a Johns Hopkins study, but again, I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know what's real, what's not real, but I wanted to look at it because I know you always talk about you can't go to the internet and do your research just because you have internet access. So tell me about this latest thing with Tylenol and pregnancy and what the studies show.
Okay, so this is the hardcore data. We looked at about 46 studies to look at a retrospective analysis of whether these Tylenol usage in a pregnant woman caused an increase in ADHD or autism. And what we found is that, is there a correlation? There have been several studies that showed correlation between those two or three things.
Tell
right?
me what correlation is, Dr. Hebert, for people that don't know.
Okay, so, and I'll give you a perfect example. Every year around August, between July and August, there's a huge increase in shark attacks across the world, right? Mm-hmm. In the summer areas of the world. And at the same time, there's a huge increase in the amount of ice cream that is sold at the same time. So those two things correlate, but that doesn't mean that the shark attacks made the people eat ice cream, or that the ice cream made people eat shark attacks. Made people have shark attacks, all right? So that means that there's a correlation between those two things, but one doesn't cause the other. They just happen simultaneously, and until we can link the fact that ice cream eating causes the shark attack, that means we can't say one causes the other. That's as clear as I can make it.
I'm so glad I asked you what correlation means.
Yeah, because it's a really big difference, and people constantly use their own personal opinions or this concept of correlation to think about causation. This is what we did during COVID. I just want to give you a prime example. Someone would come to me and say, Doc, I've done all my research. I'm decided I'm getting the COVID vaccine, but I'm decided I'm getting the Pfizer. Okay, I'll say, well, why'd you get the Pfizer? Because all my friends that got the Pfizer, none of them got sick, so I'm getting it. I said, well, that's funny, because all my friends that got the mm-hmm. Pfizer, they all got sick. And then they say, oh, man. I'm like, exactly. Correlation does not mean causation. So there are some studies of those 46 that showed a very small correlation, but the same type of correlation exists between ice cream sales and shark attacks. So what you have to look at is, how can there be causation? Okay, so there is one study that was done a few years ago that looked at 2.5 million women that were pregnant. Those women had sibling studies, which means that the woman took Tylenol when she was pregnant with one child, and then she did not take Tylenol when she was pregnant with the other child. Same father, but these studies controlled for lots of different things. They control for age. They control for smoking. They control for things that make a study valid, so that you can make sure that there's no selection bias, because you can't just say, we're going to use a whole bunch of white women, or we're going to use a whole bunch of black women. You have to have black women, white women, poor women, rich women. You have to have everybody. And that study, the most concise study that was controlled the most, showed no causation at all. And this is the thing that made me a little bit angry about what happened the other day, is because they came out once again to say that this study, the dean of the School of Public Health mm-hmm. at Harvard, that he said that there was a study that shows causation. And he clearly, and I posted this on my website, clearly says it does not cause causation. And he also took $150,000 from different financial entities to testify against Tylenol in the court case. You see what I mean? And I posted those things on my website.
Wait, he said it does not cause. There was no causation.
There was no causation.
So he was misquoted.
Say again.
He was misquoted then.
Yeah. Well, he was. He didn't quote it. Someone from the federal government
misquoted him.
All right.
Saying that there was causation when there, or at least saying there was correlation or not causation.
Yeah. There was. There's always been a little correlation between some of these entities, but there's never been causation.
All right, let me take it. Go ahead, Doc.
The thing that made me angry about it, though, is that when you looked at this, and I had to post this because then now.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This showed that though observational, and I'm quoting right now, observational limitations preclude definitive causation. And that was the conclusion of that study that the federal government documented the other day. And that the dean of the public health school also took $150,000 to pay to testify against Tylenol.
So what you're saying is he took the money to testify against Tylenol, but even then he still said there was no causation.
Absolutely. Okay. And if you go to Corey Hebert, MD, on Twitter, on Facebook, or whatever, and you can see the study that I'm proving that is the fact.
All right, let me take a break. We'll talk about the Vaccine Advisory Committee when we come back. Dr. Corey Hebert, our guest, 7:23, a little bit late. Traffic now, WWL. 7:27, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Dr. Corey Hebert. I got to address this text. Somebody says, so you find one liberal doctor to agree with your opinion, and now we're supposed to trust him and not Trump. First of all, I don't know what makes Dr. Corey a liberal doctor, but I do know this. He's a doctor, and he's not a politician. So I would trust the doctor and the scientific approach as opposed to politicians making medical policy. Along those lines, tell me about the vaccine, what is the committee that met? The Vaccine Advisory Committee?
The ACIP. Yeah. The ACIP. Now let me say this. Can I address that comment?
Sure, seriously? Absolutely.
First of all, I think what the president did actually was not necessarily the worst thing, because in the final analysis, what he said was, go to your doctor and make your decision based on the leadership of your doctor. So they didn't take Tylenol off the market. They didn't do anything like that. They just said, you know what? You do what you think is best for your baby, or as a clinician, as a patient. And what one thing I do want to tell people, though, when we talk about this Tylenol and autism thing, I want you to recognize that those studies that I mentioned and all the studies that we've done, they don't show causation. But what we do know as a fact that is unequivocal is that if you are a woman and you have a very high fever during the first trimester of pregnancy, we have a clear causation that your child has an increased risk of autism and ADHD.
See, and that's what I was going to ask you. You got to be taking the Tylenol for some reason, right? So if you're taking it, how do you know it's not the underlying condition that's causing the autism and not the Tylenol, the reason for which you're taking the Tylenol? Okay.
I mean, you just got to think, how many things are going on in a woman's life, in a fetus's life, for all these things to be all in one line for it to prove something like that. It's almost impossible to prove. But the point is that we do know that if you have a fever and you are pregnant in the first trimester, there is an increase. That's why you have to look at the risk-benefit ratio on whether you should take Tylenol. So you say, I have a study that says I know if I have a fever that is going to probably cause autism or ADHD, but I don't have a study that says if I take Tylenol, it's definitely going to cause it. So which one would you do?
And then if you have, Dr. Corey, just to take it one step further before we run out of time, Then if you have a high fever as a mother and you decide to get your child vaccinated and autism manifests itself, well, then you can't blame it on the vaccine. You got to go back to where the causation is, right?
That is correct. That's why it's so hard to prove causation in a situation like this with so many confounding variables. And I think that's the biggest problem you're talking about. But the ACIP, what they do is they decide, that's of the CDC, they decide basically how and when a vaccine is going to be given, and the FDA says whether the vaccine is safe and effective.
So, real quick, when it comes to causation with autism, what have they found? High fever and what else, Doc?
Really, there's so many things that are correlative, but there's really no one thing that you can say causes this more than genetics and environmental factors. And that's why what you have to do is always make sure that you do the best thing when you're pregnant. Do the best thing. Keep your baby away from so many things that could cause any type of issue with the baby, as well as when the baby comes. Don't feed them horrible food. Don't expose them to horrible toxic chemicals. You know, these are the types of things that we do know. But as far as vaccines, as far as Tylenol, we just don't have that answer yet. So, and hopefully we do.
So
that's the path.
It seems like on one side you got 1,000 different variables. Then on the other side you got, well, everybody gets a measles vaccine, so let's blame it on a measles vaccine, right?
Exactly.
There's your correlation and not causation.
Yeah, and by the way, I've been a principal investigator on over 100 clinical trials, so I'm not just a regular dude. I'm a dude that does this for a living.
Oh, you're our dude. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Dr. Corey Hebert, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at LSU Health New Orleans School of Medicine. I don't know why the president chooses to weigh in on this, but he does. Politically, I tell him stay away from it. 7:31, we'll talk about the Fujirawa or something like that effect when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. 7:47, 13 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Barry Keim, LSU health climatologist, to talk about, well, the first thing we're talking about is how you pronounce it. Good morning, Barry. How are you?
Good morning. How you doing, Tommy?
I've been struggling with this thing. What do you call it? How do you say it?
It's the Fujiwara.
Fujiwara. I got that right?
Fujiwara effect.
Fujiwara effect. Right, tell me what right that on. Means and what it's affecting.
Okay, so, and why this is relevant today, the Fujiwara effect occurs when any two tropical storms or hurricanes, they get close enough to start to interact with each other. And basically what happens is, if you think about these two major systems, I mean, they're large in scale, they basically start to orbit around each other, around a common center. Basically, they're doing the two-step, if you will. Mm-hmm. They rotate around each other. And sometimes the larger storm, if you have one storm that's way larger than the other, the larger one will capture or absorb the smaller one. But if they're about the same size, they'll just basically do this little dance around each other and then go their separate ways. And they usually kind of reorient the storms and, you know, send them off in paths that are almost totally unpredictable. So it's a really tough prediction situation for the National Hurricane Center right now.
So we're talking about, is Imelda a storm yet or not?
Not yet. It's still just a mass of thunderstorms that is developing, but they do expect it to be a tropical depression sometime over the weekend and probably become a named storm Sunday or Monday. So we'll just keep a close watch on that one, but it's got a little ways to go.
And then you got Umberto, right, which is a storm.
That's correct, yeah. Umberto right now is I'm pretty sure I get this right. It is at hurricane status right now with winds at 65 knots. So it's a minimal hurricane right now.
So neither one of these are going to be of consequence to us here in Louisiana, right?
No, nothing to worry about here in Louisiana. However, if you were in the Carolinas, you probably have a lot to worry about. Mm. So just to give you a little background. So we have the two models, the American model and the Euro model. The American model really doesn't have very much interaction taking place. So I would argue minimal Fujiwara effect being shown in that model. The Euro model, on the other hand, does have some interaction taking place. And what the storms do is Umberto is going to help hold Imelda in place over the Carolinas, right off the coast. Mm. And if that scenario plays out, it could rain like hell over that area. Mm. You know, we could be looking at 15, 20, 25 inches of rain across that area because it could sit there for several days.
So when you started with me a couple of minutes ago, I pictured you like the guy in a perfect storm with the Kleenex tucked into your collar for the makeup and you're eating a donut and you're looking at the screen and you said, this could be the perfect storm. But actually, that's not the case at all. These don't combine into one superstorm. It just affects, is it the intensity or the path of the storm primarily or both?
All of the above, Tommy. So some storms, like I said, if you have two storms that are about the same strength, they'll just kind of rotate around each other and then go their separate ways. Mm-hmm. But if one storm is significantly larger and stronger than the other, it'll just absorb it. And the term they use is capture. And I'll give you a couple of examples. In 2005, Hurricane Wilma just completely absorbed a smaller tropical storm. It was Tropical Storm Alpha. And, of course, you know, we were reeling from Hurricane Katrina. We didn't really give a damn about anything else going on. But this happened right off the coast of Florida. And, of course, that, you know, this absorbing that smaller storm reinforces
the
circulation.
Wait, say that part again, Barry.
I don't know which part you missed.
Just but, now. But I didn't miss it. I want people to hear it again, what you said just now.
Yeah, so Hurricane Wilma absorbed about the tropical storm.
Yeah.
About Katrina, you mean?
Yeah.
Katrina. Yeah, we were reeling for Hurricane Katrina. Like I said, we didn't give a damn about anything happening after Katrina. And this occurred, you know, in the weeks and months following Katrina, and I don't think any of us our heads were spinning at this particular stage. So nothing else mattered, but Wilma absorbed this alpha, and it reinforced its circulation, increased its intensity, and it went on its merry way into the Atlantic Ocean. Now, we had a close call here in 2020 when we had Hurricane Laura. It you know, annihilated Lake Charles. Mm-hmm. But while it was in the Gulf, it started to interact a little bit with Tropical Storm Marco. But Marco fizzled out really before any significant interaction occurred. But I do remember doing some interviews on the Fujiwara effect back in 2020 when all this was going on.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back talking to Barry Keim, our friend, LSU health climatologist, about the Fujiwara effect. Did I say it right?
You did.
Hot.
Very good.
Diggity dog. I'm not going to say it again. 752, 8 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:58, couple of minutes left with Barry Keim, LSU health climatologist. I'm Tommy Tucker here on WWL. Barry, somebody texted, and I think it's a good question, if the storms do combine, what happens to the name of them? Who takes whose name? Kind of like a marriage.
That's a good question. We may need some lawyers for this one.
Yeah.
It keeps the name of the larger, bigger storm that does the absorbing of the smaller storm. So, and of course, you can argue that as to which storm is really absorbing the other, right? Mm-hmm. But it's actually pretty evident when you look at the maps.
Be like these football players, Tropical Storm Umberto Imelda. Let's talk about real quick the rest of the hurricane season, because look, it's September 26th. Got a cool front coming in, knocking on the door of October. What can you tell me as a climatologist looking ahead for the rest of hurricane season?
Okay, certainly nothing in the Gulf over the next 7 days, so that's a beautiful thing.
Takes us to October the 3rd, something like that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, once we get into October, the chances of a major hurricane drop significantly. And so, you know, we're looking, we still could get hit with a minor hurricane before the month of October is over. So we got about 4 or 5 more weeks before hurricanes are off the table. And then once we hit November, I'm almost hesitant to say it. I know I'm going to regret it, but we're pretty much home free when November gets here.
So are you saying we're home free as far as major storms go, or not quite?
Not quite. I'd give it, like I said, there's nothing in the offing for the next week.
Mm-hmm.
But once we get into the first week of October, the chances of a major hurricane are close to zero. Not zero, but close.
Take it a week at a time. We'll talk Saints-Bills. We come back. Every Friday, Tommy Tucker, WWL 813. Every Friday with Mike Dettillier is Rouse's Markets Football Friday. Shop and save at Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. Hey, Mike Dettillier, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Tommy. Thank you, brother.
As we get started here, I always open the depth charts for this segment that we do because I want to compare offense against defense and defense against offense. And I asked him if they still sold programs at the Saints games, because remember they used to have, when the Saints have the ball and when the other team has the ball, they'd line them up differently like that. So let's talk about when the Buffalo Bills have the ball. Ooh, they got a lot of weapons, don't they?
They got a lot of them. They don't really have a true number one receiver. Strange, as explosive as they are on offense, they don't have what you would want to kind of signify as that number one guy. But they love to run the football. It's a Joe Brady type deal. Joe was like that. Remember, he was kind of a Sean Payton protege.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to LSU. He becomes the wide receiver, passing game coordinator. But, boy, he wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in 2019 to be a big part of that. And when I watch the Bills, there are so many of the same concepts he used at LSU in his rushing attack with Buffalo with James Cook. Because we all know about the Superman guy. Okay, Josh Allen is who he is. But James Cook is a huge part of that attack. They love to run the football or get the ball out in the flat to him as a receiver. They have a really good offensive line. They got a lot of Louisiana connections, and one of them's on there already, and Osiris Torrance, their starting left, right guard, excuse me. And the guy they want to be their number one receiver is number zero, Keon Coleman from Opelousas, Louisiana. Always wanted to go to LSU. He ended up at Michigan State, and then he transferred that final season. He went to Florida State. LSU sort of ran out of wide receiver scholarships, and they got a lot of talent. What I really like about the Bills is their tight end position. I think, Tommy, in the last few years, we've seen like double-digit amounts of tight ends that have made impacts in the National Football League. And that's what they use a lot of two tight end offense with Dalton Kincaid, their former first round pick, Dawson Knox, the Ole Miss tight end, former Ole Miss tight end, and Jackson Hawes, also a rookie this year from Georgia Tech. Saints are going to get a bunch of that, but you know who's the straw that turns the drink?
Josh Allen.
And make a strong argument, the best player in pro football.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen.
So you got all of that, and then you got Josh Allen at the end of it, not at the end of it, but at the beginning of it, depending on how you want to look at it. How do the Saints defend this?
Got to hope to get a takeaway or two, because if not, what they try to do is they try to hit you and get points on the board early, and then they let their defense play sick 'em. Okay, get after the quarterback and just kind of tee off on teams. So you got to get some turnovers and hope they can help you out in that category. If it's with a fumble, interception. You heard Drew Brees say it about try to steal two turnovers away. That's a lot easier said than done. The one thing with Josh, he gives you that dimension in which he's like a big running back at times. Okay, they spread the field out. So you try to come in to get him, and he just takes off running with the damn ball. And the Saints have had difficulties matching up against teams that use the tight ends a lot. So they give you a lot of different variables here, despite the fact they don't have a true number one receiver. But they paid James Cook in the offseason. He is a legit top five running back in the National Football League. And Josh Allen, he's a legitimate top two quarterback in the NFL. He's that good.
I think Josh Allen, sometimes his size gets lost in all of this.
First time I saw him, he comes to Manning Passing Academy. Mm-hmm. Okay, I saw him on television, but I hadn't seen him in person. Archie Manning and I are watching them throw the football on the Thursday afternoon. They used to do it back then. And we're in a golf cart, and I'm with a guy who's got a camera filming it. And Archie tells me, tell your guy to move. I said, why? He's like, we're at the 20-yard line. Josh is throwing it from the end zone. He was like, wait till Allen throws it. A tropical storm had passed in the Gulf, and, man, we were getting the winds, and it was blowing inward. He threw a pass along the sideline, and the wind sort of took it a little bit and hit the top of the golf cart. And we, 80 yards away. And, I mean, he did it with, like, ease. Like, okay, Mr. Receiver. I mean, he hit the top of that golf cart.
Tell your guy to move.
He said, tell him to move. And, man, we all scrambling because, I mean, that ball's coming straight for us, and it hit the top of the damn golf cart.
And he can move, too, for being a big guy.
Yes, he can. He's got some mobility, and he's just such a big, big man. He's built like a lumberjack. You know, he's like 6'5 and some change, 240 pounds. But his movement skills for such a big man is really, really good, Tom. And so he gives you so many different dimensions that you have to go up against. And when you know, it's
and he doesn't go
a
down
difficult
easy.
Play.
Doesn't go down easy.
Well, he does. You don't see him slide. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he wants to try to run over.
I'm talking about
you.
If you got him trapped in a pocket too, he doesn't go down easy.
You better bring him down. You better be two arms around him. You ain't bringing him down with no one arm. And he doesn't take the seat, as they would say, as a defensive lineman. I mean, he'll fight you to the bitter end for it. They're a very good football team on offense. Tommy, they got deficiencies on defense. I just don't know if the Saints can take advantage of that.
Let's talk about the deficiencies on defense when we come back. Talking to Mike Dettelier, breaking down the Bills and the Saints. You can hear all the action here on WWL. Our coverage starts at 8 o'clock, I think it is. Noon kickoff, 8:20. Traffic now, WWL. 8:25, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Every Friday morning, 8:15, we break down the Saints game with Mike Dettelier. It's Rouse's Markets Football Friday.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Friday, shop and save at Rouse's, the official supermarket of the Saints. Mike, before we move on to the Buffalo Bills defense, when you talk about the Saints defense, how do they stop that Bills offense?
You got to stop the run first. I'm a big believer in that. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to say, but you got to say, you know what, if you're going to beat me with Josh Allen throwing the football, do it.
Ooh,
but I'm
like
not going to let you. I'm not going to let you control the clock.
Because he can spin it, can't he?
Yeah, he can, but yeah. If they can run the football, that's right up their alley. That's what Joe Brady wants to do. He wants to control the tempo of a game. I mean, I can almost like hear him talking to me in 2019 that what him and Steve Ensminger were doing at LSU, and he was like, you know, we just got to control the tempo, and we do that by running the football. We do it with running it. And so – he brought that sort of concept with him when he went to Carolina and things didn't exactly work out great for him. And then he goes to Buffalo and things have really worked out well. And they really want to run the ball because of the fact I think they want to try to protect Josh Allen from getting knocked around.
I'll tell you what I didn't like you saying is go out to a big lead and then just run it down your throat. After what happened on Sunday against the Seahawks. That I did not want to hear.
Well, that's what they want to do. That's what Joe has sort of built the attack in. He takes that from Sean Payton. He told me that that's part of what he learned from Coach Payton when he was here with the Saints. Was that he said when those explosive Saints teams would get out to a big lead, the Saints were running the football 35, 40 times a game. He said, you know, we just sort of fed it to him. And he said then every once in a while, Drew would step back, throw the football, bang, touchdown. And that's what they do with Buffalo once they get a lead.
And the Saints' offense, hardly explosive. It seems to me, Mike, the kind of game where the only chance they have to win is if everything goes right, if they get a couple of turnovers. If you have a chance for an interception, you got to make it. If you got a chance for a strip, you got to make it. If you got to have a chance to make a play on defense, you have to make it, or offense. And if everything doesn't go perfectly, they don't have a chance. Thoughts?
I agree. Your margin of error is tight in every game, but it's really tight against Buffalo. The crazy thing about the Bills is the fact that they have spent a lot of capital in the offseason. They brought in Joey Bosa, a defensive end from the Chargers. Mm-hmm. They used 3 early-round picks on defensive linemen. And we remember game one. Derrick Henry did start a trend, which I had never seen before. He fumbled the ball late. But Derrick Henry's still running the football. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it had been two-hand touch, he'd have still rushed for the same amount of yards against Buffalo. They weren't even hardly touching him. last Thursday against Miami, a team not noted for running the ball, the Dolphins ran for over 130 yards and averaged over 5 yards a rush against Buffalo. That I would be concerned about that if I'm Buffalo. If you're talking about this team legitimately being a Super Bowl caliber team, you got to be able to stop people. You got to be able to stop people in the running game. It was not the major concern. We had Ryan Nielsen at Louisiana Line Camp. He came on Sports Talk with Steve and I when we did the show there. And before we started the interview with him, I asked him, what's your biggest concern? He said, no, it's not stopping the run. He said, it's my secondary. He said, we got a lot of young pieces and a lot of new pieces in the secondary, but they've been gashed by teams who really want to run the football. If I'm the Saints, I got to do that. And I try to control the tempo of that game early by running it.
Can they win? Can they keep it close?
I don't think either one. I just think their offense is so explosive in so many areas that they win big. And for Bills fans, this is a treat. It is a rarity to play at 12 noon in Buffalo because they've been so good for so long. Mm-hmm. They have these Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday games, or they play at 3:20 in the afternoon. It's rare that they play at noontime. Tickets are almost triple if you were to buy them, you know, in Buffalo, because it's such a rarity to play in Buffalo at noontime.
Let's hope. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Mike Dettelier, WWL NFL analyst. We'll take a break. Come back. Time for WWL First News. So that will go to Ian Ozan. I can think of places I'd rather be during a power outage than underground on a subway in New York City. No, of course, we also talk about cutting the cable or cutting the cord when it comes to TV. That's not what happened yesterday. And Jay Vice joins us now, PIO for the Orleans Parish Communication District. Talk about that. How you doing, Jay?
Hey, good morning, Tommy. Thanks, as always, for having us back on again.
What happened?
Well, as we learned yesterday afternoon, just after 1:30, we suddenly noticed that we had service interruptions for both our 311 services for the city of New Orleans, Orleans Parish, and 911 services. That is highly unusual. There's sometimes been circumstances with a carrier outage where, you know, AT&T or Verizon individually might have a problem localized, and we would get word about this. As we quickly found out, this was a regional outage affecting most of Louisiana, Mississippi, and apparently into Alabama. And we haven't got the specific details from AT&T. And AT&T put the word out that some bundle of fiber optic lines dedicated to serving emergency communications in Mississippi got cut. And they, the Mississippi governor, Governor of Mississippi, posted that AT&T told them that it was a series of cables and something in one cut. Obviously, they think accidental, not intentional. Mm-hmm. But it had the impact of turning off 911 capabilities to dial 911 across Louisiana. That's the metro New Orleans area, all of the communications 911 operations across the North Shore as well into Mississippi. And it was, I was talking to my boss again this morning. This is the first time something of this nature in our memory has happened, where it's called, it's not related to a storm, something blue sky, mm-hmm. just out of the blue, that's happened like this. It's, you know, it's concerning, but it's we have backups to backups. Our facility here is at City Park Avenue, and it's a big back. You go into the WWL Odyssey engineering room, and you see all the redundancy and backups and generators and things like that. And that's largely what they have here, and that's what they have at communications.
But none of that matters if the cable gets cut, right?
Exactly. And the beauty of 911, the carriers and the whole system is set up so that that type of emergency communications is prioritized. It's set on different circuits and some of its own hardware, so that in the event of some other things going down or an emergency, 911 services get prioritized. When you dial 911, it'll get you to the nearest 911 operation. But in this case, all those eggs in one basket, which is beneficial 99.9% of the time, somewhere, you know, a cable or a series of cables got cut, and it interrupted that functionality. Like we have normal backup numbers here that say if a carrier goes down or we have some type of outage here with our infrastructure, we can put out a separate backup number. But in this case, we had to scramble, and about 30 minutes later, we were able to get a specific backup number with one of our vendors that went around all that, and people were able to get to our 911 system. So it's kind of unprecedented. We thank everybody for their patience, and for folks just to understand that we live in a modern digital era, and we share all the same services that a lot of folks do. So these things are rare, but this was a very unusual occurrence that impacted all of Louisiana. We're thankful it only lasted 2 hours.
Somebody's in a lot of trouble, I'll tell you that. Thank you, Jay. We appreciate it. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Vicky Salemi, career expert from Monster, about job hugging. What is that? We'll find out when we return. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 8:47, 13 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this Friday morning. What is job hugging? Let's find out. Vicky Salemi joins us now, our friend, career expert for Monster. How you been, Vicky?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How the turntables tied, because we're talking about workers job hugging now. Before, it was the Great Resignation. What is job hugging?
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? Job hugging happens when workers cling to their jobs. They're not looking to leave. They don't want to leave. They stay put in their current role.
And why is that? What changed? To me, it all goes to balance of power, where whether it's an employee's market or an employer's market, am I making stuff up in my head, or is that true?
It is true. It is. The pendulum keeps swinging, and right now workers are nervous. If they get a new job, what if they'll be downsized right away? They feel maybe perhaps more safe in their current job. And we can dive into the pros and cons of this if you want. But
let's do it.
Okay.
Let's dive.
So here we go. So the thing to remember is, if you stay in your current job, there are no guarantees that you won't be downsized there either. Mm. And if you're nervous about leaving, if you don't have a new job offer, then the only option is to stay. But I always say, and at Monster we believe thoroughly, look for a new job. Because if you look for a new job and you get one and you land one and you negotiate a really great offer, then you can compare apples to apples. Look at the salary. Look at the commute, the benefits, the opportunity, the growth, the path to promotion. And then decide if you're going to stay and be a job hugger or leave. And also find out where your current company is going. Are they going to have layoffs versus a new company that you want to explore? So it's always a good idea to, you know, there's no shame in job hugging, but I just want to make sure your listeners can keep all their options open and then decide if it's worth it to stay.
And I would add that, you know, if you do look for options and you don't have any, then maybe it'll make you a little bit more committed to what you have now, because you don't really have anywhere to go, right?
Right, exactly. And you want to stay committed, focused, and be super productive. But that's why it's always important to have your resume ready, because what if you are committed to your current job and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, you're laid off? So you want to always protect yourself, update your resume, apply to jobs, have networking conversations, and just always keep your eye on that exit door just in case. I'm not saying you need to leave, especially if you're happy in your current role, but it's always a good idea just to think ahead.
Is this about the types of jobs that are available, where the economy's going, unemployment rate, private sector, public sector, private equity, et cetera? Take me through all of that, Vicky, because there's got to be a lot of different variables in this, right?
There are. There are so many. And although I'm not an economist to speak more intelligently about the markets and different things, I can say is I think it's just overall the pendulum. So if we look overall macro approach, it's the majority of people, let's say, are holding on to their jobs, then there's less movement. There's less job opportunities. So the people who do want to leave and look for a new job may have less opportunities to do that. And so it's like a trickle-down effect that it just kind of compounds. But then once people start leaving, and we saw in the Great Resignation when people, there was a mass exodus and so many people left, it created a lot of movement. So then other people who were on the sidelines said, wait, there are job opportunities right now, so I can leave. So I think, you know, job hugging, I think it's a trend that we're seeing now. And hopefully if people start looking for new jobs and start leaving and there's more movement, then other job seekers can get off the sidelines too and say, wait a minute, let me look for a new job, because there are opportunities. And there are definitely other opportunities right now with, say, healthcare, IT, tech. With the holidays coming, it's a great time to look for a seasonal job and gain new skills, get your foot in the door. If you can manage the schedule, earn more money. Because also, even though people are staying in their current job, that doesn't mean they're necessarily entirely happy. And that's the other nuance, is they may feel more comfortable because they're concerned about layoffs, but maybe they haven't gotten a raise in a couple of years. Or maybe they're kind of complacent, thinking, you know, well, let me just ride this out and do what I need to do on a daily basis and then look in the future. So there's a lot going on.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Talking to Vicky Salemi, career expert in Monster. We'll talk about quiet cracking when we come back. We'll talk about the stratum of jobs when we return. Are there more opportunities at the lower level than the upper level? What's going on with CEOs, middle management, et cetera? And we're also going to talk about overplaying your hand, because you want to make sure that you don't play more than you have the cards to back up, right? Because then you wind up taking your stuff home in a box. 852, 8 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:57 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Vicky Salemi, career expert for Monster. We're talking about job hugging. What is quiet cracking, Vicky?
Quiet cracking happens before quiet quitting. So what does that mean? Think about the crack, like the moment when you're just done with your job and it's a slow deterioration. You've reached burnout and you realize you have that awareness, like this is just not cool, and it's the point of no return. And then that leads to quiet quitting, when you decide that you're going to do the bare minimum.
What is it that leads to quiet quitting or quitting? I get it out. Quiet quitting or quiet cracking? Is it management? Is it challenges? And that brings me to my next question, which is about the stratum of job opportunities. Is it more at the lower level, middle level, mid-management, upper level? Who should be excited about the opportunities? Who should be cautious about what the situation is?
Well, I can backtrack to say what leads to the quiet quack. It's so hard to say when you combine it,
quiet,
right?
Quiet quacking. That's why every duck, that's why most ducks quit their jobs, is quiet quacking. I don't know if you knew it or not. Go ahead.
Yes, quiet quacking. They reach that moment of burnout. They feel underpaid, overworked, overburdened, unrecognized, undervalued. So I think that's what leads to it. And then that goes to your question, Tommy, about what level. I think that happens anecdotally more on the lower level, but mm-hmm. It can also happen at the higher level of management and executive. But overall, it seems to be trending, again, anecdotally, among mostly, I say, more entry level or less seasoned workers.
Thank you, Vicky. I appreciate your time as always. Vicky Salemi, career expert for Monster. We have reached happy hour. Table talk with Ian McNulty coming up. He covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune. New Orleans Advocate. We'll talk about where he's been eating and where he's been drinking. We missed him last week, I think, if I remember correctly. But he will be back with us at 9 o'clock in a couple of minutes, at 9:10 rather. And then we're going to talk to JR with Take in Vegas. We'll get some weekend winners for you. So a lot coming up, a lot of fun coming up. Stay with us as we wrap up the week, morning show-wise, here on WWL. Thank you, Ian Ozan. Great week of work, but you're not done yet. No, sir. High school football fans, get ready for week 4 of the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup. You can join the aforementioned Ian Ozan, my former schoolmate, Coach Lou Valden, tonight, every Friday night at 7, for the most comprehensive high school football show in America. Tonight, you're broadcasting live from where? That opens up Catholic League play, although Catholic League is a misnomer because it... But back in the day, Chalmette used to be in the Catholic League, too. Plus, they'll have prep reporters stationed at key games throughout the metro and epic battles in southeast Louisiana, including Mandeville at Slidell, Brother Martin at Jesuit, LaRonger at Kentwood, Covington at North Shore. Get ready for Friday Night Lights, Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup, presented by Acadian Companies and Dr. Pepper, tonight from 7 till 10:30, only on WWL. Ian, I'm going to be listening. Don't let me down. All right, from one Ian to another, from Ian Ozan to Ian McNulty, who covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. How you doing, Ian?
Oh, Tommy, great to be back.
Yes, sir. We missed you last week.
Yeah, last time this week, we couldn't talk because I was flying in an airplane across the sea. I tried and tried to get the pilot to tune us in somehow, mm-hmm.
You travel a lot. Are you trying to flee indictment or something? Or what's going on?
Well, we all have our ways of getting through a New Orleans summer,
yeah,
don't we?
I'm telling you. I thought maybe you might be a member of Mayor Cantrell's Travel Club or something. Anyway, where you been eating, where you been drinking, what you been up to?
That's too rich for my blood, Tommy.
There you go.
I pay my way. I had the experience of returning from a long vacation, and it was great. I was overseas. It was very different. It was amazing. Had all kinds of adventures, mostly of the food-related variety. But at the end of it, I had that good feeling that I usually get. I'm like, okay, that was a great time, and I'm coming home mm-hmm. to New Orleans. You know, like, we all go on these vacations, maybe, and get the there's a possibility for a little bit of blues at the end of it. You know, you count the days and it goes by so fast. But then, like, you know, coming back to late September in New Orleans with all the good stuff ahead.
Do you want to hear something weird? That's why I don't go on vacation.
Is that it?
Because I hate for it to end, and I hate going through that. So for me, it's easier just to stay at work. What does that say about me?
I don't want to read too much into that, Tommy, but you're dedicated to your community and your job.
I am. That's what it says about me. Continue on, please, Ian.
So I had that experience of coming home and being like very grateful to be back home again and for all the stuff that's open to us here. And so what did I do? I mean, the first meal had to be something extremely Louisiana, very sort of a homecoming type of meal. And so I beat a pass to Gabrielle Restaurant on Orleans Avenue. Right
and here. What did you have?
A lot of people will remember this place, Tommy, those with long memories, as for its long run on Esplanade Avenue up by City Park, or by Terra Nova's, by Cafe Degas, that cluster of restaurants over there. If you haven't been to the newer location, I say newer, it's been around for open there for almost a decade now. This is same family, Chef Greg, now his daughter, Gabrielle, who was the namesake of the restaurant in the old days, now running the place in front. It's serving a lot of the same dishes that they did back in the day. I mean, this is a kind of a time warp restaurant, but in a way that a lot of the great New Orleans, Louisiana food can feel timeless. It doesn't feel outdated. It just feels like correct, right, and not bowing to trends or styles or anything else. So this is, you know, Bob Dylan had that album Blonde on Blonde. This is a classic example of Louisiana cooking. It's brown on brown. You know, in the Instagram age, it simply does not present all that well because it's roux covered with gravy, steeped in sauce, but it rings with flavor.
It tastes good, doesn't it? It might not photograph well, but it tastes good.
Yep. So of course it was gumbo. I mean, I've been out of Louisiana for 10 days. I'm coming back. I'm getting gumbo. I mean, that's just, as they say in math class, a given. I'm getting the barbecue shrimp pie, which is one of their creations there. It's been on the menu for decades, which, again, think barbecue shrimp, that sauce, nothing to do with barbecue whatsoever, but brown, peppery, buttery, smothering these big fat shrimp over a crisp pie crust with like a sweet potato filling. Just fantastic.
It's preach it, brother. Preach it.
Two courses of Thanksgiving in one place. we're off to the races after that. You know, a Sazerac, of course, to start things off, what I call a welcome back Sazerac. Peppermint patty dessert at the end. What did we have in the middle there? I guess we had the fish. We had the duck, excuse me. not fish, but fowl. Another dish that's been on their menu forever, done with a little, it's Louisiana hunting camp food, but done by a chef. And it just made me really glad to be back home again, surrounded by New Orleans people and back in the mix. And, you should try this sometime, Tommy. You really should. Get your head up over the levees, out of the southeast Louisiana area. Go experience.
Well, I'm afraid of heights, so I don't know about that. What did you just say? Hunting camp food. How did you say that? I think that was excellently put.
Oh, as if prepared by a chef.
As prepared by a chef. That pretty well describes Louisiana cuisine, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, some of the best of it, absolutely. And actually, that's a good segue. Today, this is a place that you and I talked about in preview a little bit, but the new Riverfront restaurant down on Spanish Plaza.
Mm-hmm. In New Orleans. Oh, yeah. John Besh's place?
That's right. Yeah. Delacroix. They opened this week. I haven't been since I did a walkthrough earlier just to get a feel for the place, but they're doing a grand opening, sort of blessing of the fleet type of thing today. And they are they're up and running. It's John Besh is the guy, the head of the company, of course. The chef there herself is named Wiley Lewis, who's been with their company for a long time, taking a big step up with this one, and is someone I love it when you see this. She's someone who's from Louisiana, and you know I think she grew up in North Louisiana, but spent a lot of family time down in Southwest Louisiana in particular. And you know, you talk to Louisiana people, they can get very I would say balkanized, but in a good way. You know, like your swamp Cajun is different from your Bayou Cajun, your Prairie Cajun kind of thing. So that's a corner, you know, to the southwest of Lafayette by what is it? duck hunting country over there, Kaplan, that kind of thing, where if you stop at a gas station, in addition to the boudin, they have things called pistolets, which are just these little rolls filled with, you know, like a shrimp etouffee kind of thing, whatever they're stuffing it with, these little stuffed flavor bombs. And, you know, Chef Wiley just incorporated that onto the menu, had, I think, Leidenheimer bread for the folks who made up the roll for them, the pistolets. And it's just these little things that are like markers of place that are being worked into, you know, a modern, upscale casual, but definitely upscale restaurant menu that you wouldn't really get if you were from somewhere else. So it might need a little translation if you're coming to visit. And there's going to be a lot of visitors, believe me. This is like down on the lakefront, you know, next to the casino, the aquarium, the French Quarter, the ferry landing going over to Algiers.
Riverfront.
Yeah, it's tourist central, but it should also be local central because it owns this commanding view of the river where mm-hmm. the ships come around. You see the crescent that gave the city its nickname. And I think it's great that there's a new restaurant of this caliber, of this ambition anyway, finally open there.
So, is this a reservation place, Ian? Is it somebody texted in about how fancy it is? Do you walk in? Is it tourists? Do they fake the funk? Tell me your theory on it, your feeling on it.
Okay. Now, in fairness, they are just opening the doors, right? But, you know, you can get an impression of a place. It is going to be a magnet for tourists because where it is, and that's fine. I want people visiting New Orleans to have the kind of food that resonates with locals. And I think given this this kitchen and this chef, that's what they'll be doing. And the menu that I've seen looks like it's legit. That said, it's not, it's a brand new restaurant. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say upscale, but it does have nice touches and it's, you know, nicely designed. And there was an eye given to the style, to the feel of the place. It's not a ramshackle joint that you're finding down around the curve, you know, 6 miles down Four Mile Bayou in Bubba Country. It is, a modern chef-led restaurant, on a major piece of real estate on the riverfront in New Orleans. So that's significant. But I think if people remember the restaurant Born, which is also a BRG best restaurant in the Hyatt, that sadly didn't come back after, COVID.
Remember that.
Yeah, restaurant had a menu that I liked that was like very Louisiana. It had hunting camp elements to it for sure. Duck poppers, that kind of thing. Some of the vibe of that menu, perhaps, but with a much more, like, we're taking you down the bayou feel to the decor. There's a pirogue on the wall. There's family photos of the chef when she's a little girl out hunting. There's, old vintage Jack's beer cans that they must have found at a estate sale in the back of someone's garage or something that's mm-hmm. been polished up. So it looks real nice, but the big thing is the view. I mean, it's basically all windows, a box of windows, facing the river. If you ever spend any time on the river, the more I do, the more I want to get back out there, whether it's taking the ferry over to Algiers Point for a little field trip and a pint and a bite, or going upriver, frankly, to another good attraction that's coming into its prime season here in the fall, the Batcher. I think that's a place you and I haven't talked about yet, but that's, go a couple miles upriver from Delacroix, the restaurant we were just talking about, and you go past Audubon Park, past the Fly, and a part of the Batcher, right, the wet side of the levee, that was an industrial yard for an oil field service company, mm-hmm. is now a cluster of various things, a couple offices.
And where is this, Ian?
This is if you know where Audubon Park is in the Fly, it's the next address upriver from that.
Okay.
I think the address is something like 25 Walnut Street, something you've never heard of, but it's over the levee. You do not see this from Magazine Street, from Leek Avenue there. You know, if you know where the Uptown Square is, mm-hmm. the Army Corps Engineers headquarters, where you dropped off your...
I didn't know there was anything over there.
Yeah, well, there wasn't. I mean, it was just this industrial yard, you know, mm-hmm. where they kept gear that was going offshore because it's the Batcher. It's the site that takes water. The developers of it have figured out a way to turn it into a social, recreational space where you can go out, kids can run around, and there's a variety of food trucks and pop-ups and semi-permanent kind of lean-to restaurants, I'd call them, little booths and stands.
They're on a Batcher, so you would wonder how permanent they could be unless they built it up, right?
They got to be able to pull up stakes, yeah. And this is also the home now for the Tuesday Crescent City Farmers Market, which is a delight. Mm-hmm. So you can go out there on a Tuesday morning, shop, get a coffee, get a breakfast burrito, just take in the scene. And if you go back on the weekends, I believe they're doing a Friday through Sunday situation now, you'll find these food booths and stands and such open. There's a bar, of course, but it's big, wide open space right on the river. So I'm a fan of these projects that are reconnecting New Orleans with this riverfront, basically. And it's not just a scenic view, but also if you're like me, your idea of a scenic view can definitely include a 20,000-ton tanker plowing up the river with its antennas dangling and its radar twirling and horns blowing and tugboats tugging around. And, you know, it's just the majesty of the area that we live. And these places frame it up nicely, and you can get some street food and a drink while you watch the show. So I'm here for it.
Somebody texted in as you were mentioning gorgeous river views, and I remember this. My mom used to love to go to the Hilton Jazz Brunch. I think she liked the brunch more, the jazz more than the food. Tim Laughlin used to play there, and they had this tremendous panoramic view of the river. Whatever happened to that? They still do that or not?
No, sadly. I mean, there was that era of the rooftop hotel lounges, and the king of that, the peak, really the crown, was the top of the mart at the World Trade Center building, which is now the Four Seasons Hotel. So that's certainly had a, you know, living its best life in a way, but it no longer has that revolving lounge that was so magnificent. I think it was, I don't know, Tommy. I think maybe it was a sign of the era. I know, I think a lot of these things were developed in the 70s and 80s, sort of age of the future kind of thing. And, I mean, they don't have to all spin. The one that you're describing wasn't, unless you had a lot of mimosas. I mean, you could do some self-imposed spin.
Yeah. You know what else I used to do on Saturday nights, now that I think of it? My dad used to love this. They had an Italian buffet. And again, you know, it's a buffet and it's a hotel. I get all of that. I'm not trying to demean anybody. But they had college students running around singing Italian songs. You remember?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember that or not? Did you ever take part in any of that?
That's before my time, okay. But it sounds charming.
It was charming.
That reminds me a bit of Cafe Giovanni, if we're talking about restaurants that ain't there no more, unfortunately. Chef Duke's great Italian restaurant, Decatur Street in the French Quarter, where you'd be somewhere between your lasagna and your burrata, and the people would break out in song. You know, it sounds like something that's staged as a social media prank now, but it was the real deal.
What do you call it? A flash mob. Is there any Italian place right now that does that you know of, where they have strolling singers?
Not that I know of. Again, unless it's something that truly is spontaneous and just happens, or the Tulane University Glee Club is out for.
Well, you and me start one. Let's go to Venetia's tonight and just start singing and see what happens. 9:24, we'll take a break. It's Table Talk with Ian McNulty. More when we come back. You got any questions or comments about where to eat or drink? 504-260-1870. Oakland Road Jeweler Talk and text line. I'll pass them along. We come back. No texting and driving. Back in a flash, WWL. It is more than tons of fun when Ian McNulty is with us. It is megatons of fun. He covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. We call it Table Talk, and we're discussing places to eat and drink. Ian, let me get to the questions now, if we can. Somebody's looking for a steakhouse in Lakeview.
Easy. The Steak Knife. This is one of my favorite places in New Orleans, actually. For a steak, and for a hang. It's been around for more than 50 years, which is kind of shocking to say out loud. Not because it, I mean, it feels like it's been there for a long time. It has been there for a long time. But it doesn't have that veneer of like a really old New Orleans restaurant, right? It's, I guess it's been, had a few renovations through the day, but it's sort of a modern classic. The bar, it's a big long bar, which, you know, through the day can feel like, you know, it's people coming in from City Park golf courses, and then it's like kind of the social hub of Lakeview, and there's always a little bit of intrigue happening somewhere around the corner of the bar. But the staff there, they make a great martini. The wedge salad is fantastic. This little thing called the tidbit, you should get beforehand. It's like just bread and cheese and seasoning. It looks like something that you whipped up because company came over without telling you, and this is all you had in the fridge, but it turns out to be a house classic. It's just delicious. And then the steaks, I mean, they just cook them right. It's nothing too fancy. It's in the age of, you know, $200 flaming tomahawk, you know, the hatchet stuck in it kind of expense account show steaks. Mm-hmm. This is just a straight up New Orleans steakhouse with a lot of normal ones characters in between, and take a look at the walls too. You know, if those walls could talk, they'd probably start singing like Louis Prima. It's a really fun, interesting place, and I'm never disappointed, and I'm usually much happier about life when I leave there.
I don't know if you can hear it or not, but I'm raising an eyebrow. Intrigue, you say?
Yeah, a little intrigue here or there. You know, I love sitting at the bar at a restaurant.
Yeah.
You get all the dirt, right?
I love intrigue.
Yeah, it could be stuff going on between the staff at some mm-hmm, restaurants. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, someone's ex is across the bar. Mm-hmm, it could be, you know, hey, I live the life. I'm not sure. Immune to the stuff. I'm sure people chat about me at the bar sometimes. But it's not just the steaks that are juicy at the bar at the Steak Knife, my friend.
Let's talk. Somebody texted about, have you heard anything about the Boil and Barrel in Lakeview? What is that?
Wow, we're in the same parking lot here because that is right next door to the Steak Knife. Hmm. I'll take you through the whole block here.
You're parking Parlays on the neutral ground, though, aren't you, or not?
Yeah, you are, right between there. Yeah, you got Parlays on one end of the block, which, much like the Steak Knife Bar, you know, that's a bar that transforms the day. This is a drinking bar, not a dining bar, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, you got people coming in after golf. You got people coming in after rugby because it's fall now in City Park. Lots of rugby games happening there. Hey, guys. And then you got, you know, it turns into like more of a late night kind of younger scene. That's Parlays. And you go and buy, there's New Orleans hamburger and seafood, which is good at, guess what? Hamburgers and mm-hmm. seafood. Mm-hmm. You got Reginelli's, kind of the neighborhood pizzeria with big pitchers of beer and Detroit style pies. Then you get the Steak Knife. Then you're done with that block. And the next thing is Boil and Barrel. And in New Orleans, it's like, you know, you give people directions about what used to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So describe a restaurant by what it used to be, but maybe not what it immediately used to be, but what it was two or three iterations ago. So let's go. That was Mondo, Susan Spicer's neighborhood restaurant, for the longest stretch in recent memory, then briefly LJ's, and then most recently Outpost 45. But now it's Boil and Barrel. Same address, same kind of layout, much different place. If you've heard anything about Boil and Barrel, it's run by the same people who have Frankie and Johnny's way uptown, the famous boiled seafood place. So that accounts for the boil part of it. I asked them, like, hey, is this going to be Frankie and Johnny's part two? They said, no, we want to do something different. It's a different concept. The other part of it, boil, is the boiled seafood. Barrel refers to the whiskey barrels that inspire the bar. So this is definitely a bourbon bar. One of the guys who runs it, Tarek Tay, he's behind Bibelos and such. He's a bourbon fanatic, turns out. And this has a bourbon bar. We talked about brown on brown at Gabrielle for the roux and the gravy and all that. This is definitely a brown on brown situation of the rye and the bourbons and how you get them neat or in an old fashioned. And it's terrific. And it's another good cocktail spot in Lakeview, kind of the bookend to the backyard, another good bourbon spot. They actually barrel their own bourbon down on West Harrison. But at Boil and Barrel, the new place we're talking about, and boy, if you had B on your bingo card, you were doing great with this cover.
Have you ever barreled your own bourbon
No, I've not. I've right. unbarreled it, that's for dang okay. sure.
Somebody wants to know about Korean fried chicken, and the text says simply, what's the deal with Korean fried chicken? So I'll ask you, what's the deal with Korean fried chicken?
Here's the deal. Crunch, okay. man, crunch. If I wish I could snap something in half for you as sound effects over here. It is extra crunchy, and it's the sauces. They're not necessarily ridiculously hot, but mm-hmm. they are flavorful. They're earthy. There's this Korean red pepper that I'm going to mispronounce as gugujang, something like along these mm-hmm. lines. You know, don't be afraid to mispronounce things when you're ordering them. You're missing out on a world of flavor if you get right. stuck on pronunciation. Ask my French teacher.
Just point at the menu is all you got to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So the place I love this. Korean fried chicken right now, which is a great introduction to it. It's called Chi-Chi's. It's mm-hmm. uptown on Ferret Street, and it's part of that whole restaurant row there. It opened about a year ago. A lot of people know the chef, Adolfo Garcia. He's got La Boca. He's had a ton of restaurants through the years. This is his son, also named Adolfo, and his new bride, who comes to us from the Russell's Marina Grill family. So mm-hmm. local restaurant family, next generation. They went away to New York. They fell in love with Korean fried chicken, which is much more prevalent in New York than in New Orleans, and thought, we're coming home. We're going to bring something that we love with us. So it's Korean fried chicken, not exclusively. You know, it's wings. It's chicken sandwiches done that way. But also there's some sushi. There's like these fun sandwiches they make out of sushi rice and raw fish. There's towers of beer. It's got a definitely a young vibe. It's like a beer drinking, chicken eating, fun, small hole in the wall that's got a lot of energy on Ferret Street. Great place to check out. But to answer the question, the deal with Korean fried chicken is double fried. It's really extra crispy, and you do get this solid wall of crunch before the juiciness of the chicken. Hopefully, the juiciness of the chicken if done right, and then it's the seasonings on top of it. That bright red. Sometimes let's call it Korean barbecue sauce, Korean hot sauce, whatever. But it's a earthy, sometimes kind of funky, peppery sauce. But don't worry, it's not thermonuclear hot. It's just very flavorful.
And before we wrap it up, since the Saints are playing Buffalo this weekend, somebody wanted to know where's the best place or some recommendations to get some good wings in the city.
You know what? I mean, we just talked about the great wings at Chi-Chi's. I'm a sucker for, like, kind of trash wings, too, though. I say this with affection, like in the way you describe a bar as a dive bar. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I have just few places that I'm happier than when there's football on, there's a scent of fall in the air, I'm sat at Fat Harry's on St. Charles Avenue, the streetcars are rumbling by, the doors are open, there's a mix of, like, college kids and, like, people their grandparents' age who just live around the corner coming together for cold beer and a filthy, messy basket of buttery buffalo wings. They're small. You can put away 20 of them. Your hands and your face are covered with the spicy butter, and you order another beer, and you're happy. And you know, we're all rooting for the Saints. We want them to do well, but we all have a second team, right? That hopefully we're rooting for, or like have a rooting interest in, to get us through the season. And you know, you stick around for the next game or the next play or the next quarter, and then you get on with your great New Orleans weekend. So that's the one that snaps into my head. It's just football, a stack of small, buttery, tasty, indulgent chicken wings, and a perch there at Fat Harry's, and another beer, and great people watching while you're watching football too.
Fried or naked wings? How do they make them?
Fried. Definitely fried.
Fried, coated, and brown. Oh, sorry. Ian yeah. McNulty, a pleasure as always, my friend. You can find out everything you need to know about Ian McNulty by Googling.
And more than you want to know sometimes.
Yeah, by Googling what?
Ian McNulty.
Ian McNulty, there you go. You found out everything you need to know. Thank you, Ian. A pleasure as always. Another exciting, enjoyable, fun edition of Table Talk. Ian McNulty covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. We'll take a break. Come back, talk to JR with Taking Vegas. Look at some weekend winners. Right now, we pause for traffic on WWL. All right, here we go, 9:47, 13 till 10. We had some geography problems, but starting next week, I put up $5,000 of my own money, and we start letting JR manage it for us, just like he does for a lot of people. How you doing, JR?
I'm doing outstanding, Tommy. I really wish we had you in last week, because
yeah.
I knew, you know, we had a bit of a rough start to the season, a little back and forth, as it always is at the beginning of the year, first, second, third week, especially college football with the transfer portal and the NIL, a lot of new, you know, faces all over the place. So you really got to have some time. But we knew last week was going to be big. We did fantastic. I only lost one game in the NFL on Sunday. I went 7-1. So wow. Here's what I'm doing. I'm going to tell you now. College football's lighting it up, guys. I'm literally going to just be a trailblazer this week. We're going to hit everything in sight. I love this matchup between LSU and Ole Miss, number 4 against number 13. The line has been all over the place. Opened up Ole Miss minus 2.5. It's down to 1.5. The total's 56.5. I've got this one locked up. Don't think about it. Text the word win to the number 545454, and I will give you the point spread winner of this LSU-Ole Miss game. It is 100% free, and you get it via text message. So text the word WIN, that's W-I-N, to the number 545454, and we're going to give you the point spread winner of 4-0 LSU against 4-0 Ole Miss absolutely free. Text WIN to 545454.
Hi, JR. Let's talk about long game and money management, because that's what I'm going to get into here with you.
Of course. And you know what? Like, for instance, you got a really exciting week of football this week. You got a lot of great matchups. Alabama, they're taking on Georgia. I think a lot of people thought that would be a great football game, or a little better than what it's going to be at the beginning of this season. You got Auburn taking on A&M, Ole Miss going out west to take on Washington. There's a lot of good games this week. So here's what I would tell everyone. Don't just bet every game on the board because it's on TV or you're going to be watching it. You got to have strategy set up. And what I mean by that, I mean, look, we hit over 60%. I can't say that guaranteed, obviously. We're still betting on sports, but we have historically been way over 60% now for 11 straight years. So that said, I lay out strategy so that even if you're hit 50%, 52%, 53%, we're still going to make money. Not as much as we would, of course, if we hit 60 or 62%, but I can tell you now, if you're moving your bets up off of wins and you decrease them off of losses, at the end of the season, you will be ahead if you are just slightly at or above 50%. Now, we take that to the next level. That is strategies that I lay out for every client that I deal with in advance. I give you what I am going to expect over the next week, 2 weeks, month, 6 weeks. Some strategies are only 20, 30, 25 games at a time. Others, we change gears and we actually will start to move our bets up and down off of each individual play. Everything changes based on the individual we're talking to, the goal that we're looking to achieve, and frankly, the time of year it is with the quantity of games that is expected to be moved on. And this is something that you get to be a part of, Tommy, starting next week. You're going to see it firsthand. You'll be able to talk about it on air. And I really think that is going to be just downright awesome.
I think it is, too. I'm looking forward to it. I really am. Last week, you nailed it with the Colts. That was a put your foot up on a couch, have a good time, enjoy your money win. What you got for us today in terms of free pick?
In fact, I think, what does that make us now? 3-1 on air?
Pretty good.
Yep. That's not 75%, guys. Hope you're taking advantage of these games. So this upcoming week, again, you notice I really like going against very bad teams, and I like using good teams when they're going against bad teams that don't have ridiculous spreads. And a lot of times that's going to come down to being on the road. Like last week with Indianapolis on the road in a really bad Tennessee. And this week, you've got a Giants team that's not only 0-3, but I can tell you now, I don't think that Dable made the decision to put Jackson Dart in there. I think a phone call came in on the bat phone and told Dable, you're playing Jackson Dart this week. I don't care what you say, this is what's happening. Because let's face it, even with Russell Wilson playing as poorly as he has, Jameis Winston should have the next nod. But they want to throw the rookie in there and they want to get him beat up and you know, experience what the NFL speed is all
give
about.
The well, fans what, that against give the fans
LA
what they
Chargers,
want, right, JR?
Who are red hot right now, 3-0, coming into New York. I don't care that they're traveling to the other side of the country. I don't care that it's an early game for them. They're going to put it in cruise control and destroy this team from beginning to end. Get all over the Chargers, lay the 6 points, and look for them to absolutely pummel this New York Giants team. Put it on the record, I love the Chargers minus the 6.
So let it be written, so let it be done. JR, we start in earnest next week. Take us out, please.
Absolutely. Guys, look, this is all about finding the right spot. And you guys being in Louisiana, I know how much you love and support the LSU team. But look, I've got something big on this game. I want to let you know whether or not they're going to win this game or cover this game against Ole Miss. All you got to do, text the word WIN, that's W-I-N, to the number 545454, and I'm going to give you this release, the point spread winner of LSU Ole Miss, absolutely free. Again, no strings attached. All you got to do, text WIN, W-I-N, to the number 545454, and I'll give you that winner via text message, absolutely free. Tommy, I'm looking so forward to next week and making you some money. Guys, be safe, have fun, and let's go out there and make some money.
I will talk to you Monday.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.